Well, hello, it's season 5, and we are super excited that you are here as we dig into one of my favorite subjects. This season, we will be chatting with some amazingly smart and influential people in and around the arts and entertainment industry about something I like to call the inner critic. Who is this mean voice that constantly tries to stop us? And how do we confront it and kick it out of our way? From therapists to deliverance ministers to fashion icons and entrepreneurial geniuses, we are going to talk about that inner voice that wants to stop our creative passions and hinder our ability to shift culture. Head on over to my website, lindseymorgan.co, and use the promo code LOVE for 50% off the Crushing Your Inner Critic Masterclass. And now, let's get to that conversation with this week's incredible guests about their journey with the inner critic.
Welcome to the Lindsey Morgan Cider podcast. I'm really, 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 really excited, you guys, to have, this is such an honor. This is the first time I've ever had a professional athlete on my podcast. So this is so, so, so cool. This is Stephen Benedict, and he is, like I said, a professional athlete in track and field. And his specialty, which we're going to ask him a little bit more about, is the 200 and the 400 meter race. Did I get that right, Stephen?
You got it right, Linz. You got it right.
That's so powerful. I think we have a slight delay because he's in Italy, but that's okay. We're gonna go with it. It's gonna be great. So, Stephen, tell us a little bit more about your track and field experience. Like, how did this all happen? And yeah, I'd love to just hear a little bit of that story.
So that's a kind of a long story. You know, it was like really track and field was never really on my radar. Running was never really on my radar, but it came natural to me. I remember, I have a distinct memory of my first race being in I was in the summer camps, and we had like these things called like the Camp Olympics, and they would pretty much take the fastest kids from around the county from each camp and bring them to this big stadium, and that would be like their Camp Olympics. And I was the fastest kid in my camp, so I wound up going to this so-called mock Camp Olympics and wound up taking third out of all of these camps in the state. And that was my first race, but really still wasn't even on the radar. It wasn't even until, you know, several sports later that kind of kicked in. You know, my first sport ever was, I did 10 years of martial arts. I did judo, and that was a really, really favorite of my sport. Then I did football and football, baseball, soccer, everything under the sun. My parents got us into everything. It wasn't until my freshman year in high school that when I was on the football field, the track and field coach saw me on the football field, approached my parents, and tried to recruit me to come out for the team. Really, I wasn't really interested. I wanted to wrestle for that season, which was winter season. And my mother, being the strong, bold woman that she was, she really kind of put it out there where it was just like, hey, you've done every other sport. Why don't you try something new? So I did, and I went out my freshman year and wound up winning the 300 meters in the county championships for my high school. And after that, it was just kind of like a buildup. It was just something that really grew on me. I loved the aspect that it was a soul aspect sport. It was pretty much whatever you put into it, you get back, you know, because it isn't, you're not on it. You run for a team, but it's pretty much you against the clock. And ever since then, it's, you know, kind of been building up. You know, I've had my ups and downs. I've had my breaks from the sport. You know, I've had my losses and, you know, a lot of, you know, heartbreaks from things, but been blessed to run in some of the nation's greatest events, from Diamond League meets to national meets to world meets. And, you know, finishing up my career within the next 3 years and just really working with some of the best coaches in the world, which has really added a really different level to the whole thing.
Wow. That is so powerful. I can't imagine. I know you and I spoke a little bit before this and, you know, just talking about how like there's different kinds of perseverance, right? There's like mental perseverance, you know, there's emotional perseverance and there's physical perseverance. And sometimes some of us are better at some than others. But like I told you, you know, I talk a lot about kind of the mental part of things, like the inner critic or that voice sometimes tells you like, you can't do this or you're not good enough to do this. And did you ever have that in the physical realm?
Always nonstop. That's a huge, huge thing. It's, you know, there's so many pieces that go that are involved in running a race, you know, or even constantly training on a daily basis. So, you know, just to give like an overview of things, I train roughly about anywhere from 20 to 25 hours a week for a 20-second race, you know, so, you know, those numbers really don't add up. So you kind of get the vastness of it, but we're training a lot right now. Right now in my season, where I'm at right now, I'm training roughly like 9 sessions a week, you know, and there's only 7 days in a week, you know, so that means that, you know, we're doubling up on several days. But the mental aspect is huge, and it's a daily thing. You know, it's not just one day and you just wake up and you're like, oh, I got it. You know, it's a constant thing. It's a reiteration and a repetition every day. And each season becomes a different evolution of who you become and the things that you're facing in that particular time and that particular season. Whether it be loss or, you know, pain or anything like that, you know, it's a constant buildup. So, yeah, I mean, in answering to your question, that's been always a thing. You know, I've had my seasons where I've been super, super confident, and I've had my seasons where, you know, it's been a really rough time to have, you know, I've had race anxiety where it's really affected my physical aspect. So my mental game isn't on. You know, my nervous system gets tapped out. I really kind of get blown out, and, you know, it just really zaps all of my energy where I can't run at all. So the mental capacity of things is a constant work in progress. And it's really dictated not only by your self-perseverance and what you do, but also the people you surround yourself with. You know, my coaches and my teammates and, you know, that community. You really need that breeding ground where you're kind of championing each other into the next day, into the next practice, the next session, the next race, whatever the case is, you know, and that translates and correlates right over into life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. It's so true. So you would say kind of your main, and then you're also a Christian, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you would say kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, that came within the past 3 years. So that's been very accelerated too.
Oh, wow. You've only known the Lord for 3 years?
Yeah. I mean, before that, I really was, it was so kind of like the earlier aspects was, you know, I was living in and out of foster care homes when I was younger. I was put in foster care 4 months and then put back into my mother's hands, then put back into foster care for another 6 years with my brother. But that whole aspect, you know, even when I was adopted at the age of 8, we were raised in the aspect of Catholic, you know, Roman Catholic. So receiving my sacraments and stuff like that, but I had no clue what I was doing. You know, I was just receiving these things, going to Catholic school and whatever. I still had no clue. And it wasn't until years later, like, you know, within the past 3 years, 3.5 years, when I actually got baptized again and things really shifted. I was coming out of a very, very dark season and things shifted. And, you know, ever since then, my walk with God has been a very accelerated path, and he's just really, really have blessed and provided and just keeps showing up. And one of the words that I'm holding on, which you had mentioned earlier, especially for this year, you had mentioned in our previous talk, was restoration. And that is something that is kind of my word for the year. So
it's a good word. I know, it's a good word. And it's an encouraging word for all of us, you know, because we've all been through some intense shenanigans in life. I like to like keep it light, shenanigans, but lots of pain and trials and things. And yeah, just to know that God is a God of restoration and a restoring God and a redeeming God, you know, it's just like so encouraging. And in Romans 8:28, it talks about like he works all things together for our good. So even the things that, you know, were painful that someone else did to us or we did to ourselves or all the things that go on in life, because life is far from perfect, like he will redeem and restore all of that, you know, and work it for our good. And that's an encouraging thing for me and probably everybody, because we're all wanting that, you know, and that's a promise from God. So I think that's so, so powerful. So you mentioned foster care, which is so cool, because I just interviewed a few episodes ago, another friend of mine who grew up in foster care and or had some experience with foster care. And so I know that's a big thing on your heart, is like the reformation or the reformation of foster care. Would you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, and that's been a, you know, that's a constant storyline for me. And obviously it's a space in which, you know, I'm a direct product of. So I really believe, you know, taking the temperature of the whole system as a whole, and I've had my hands in a lot of it, from social work aspects, you know, dealing with organizations and dealing with governmental aspects of bill reformation and things. One of the main focal points for me has been really diving in and taking the overview aspect of the aging out youth. And the reason why I have kind of like settled there for the time being is that, you know, the kids that are early into foster care, they're provided for, you know, they're provided for underneath the system, which, you know, is not the greatest. It's very broken, and there's a lot of things that need to be fixed. But I think a lot of the spaces in which, money that's being allocated is not being allocated correctly and used in order to move the needle in this space, is the aspects that the system is so vast, and all these organizations are wanting to try to be the superhero in it, and they're not moving any parts of it because it is so vast, and they're trying to tackle it as a whole instead of tackling and trying to work together with alliances to do so. So one of the aspects for me, you know, and
I'm sorry,
the statistic.
Oh, it's kind of coming out. So maybe like start back just a few seconds.
Okay. Yeah.
It's so good.
Wait, what was the last thing?
No, it's so the first Italy to, you know, Santa Monica call. So it's, yeah, it's real.
I know.
No, you were starting to get into the aging out. Like you had kind of went through, like, it's not a perfect system, but the kids are provided for, you know, younger, but it's when they start to age out that really is on your heart.
Yeah, the aging out aspect is a really big piece for me. And the reason why, the statistics overall, so just to give you kind of like a overall view of things, is that the statistics of these kids when they age out is from like 40 to 50% of them end up within the first 3 to 4 months homeless, incarcerated, dealing drugs, sexually trafficked, or even dead. And that number is way, that's astronomical for these kids, you know, and it's for the simple aspect is that we pretty much wash our hands of them, and the system washes their hands of them as soon as they're out of the system. They don't have like, okay, well, you're aged out now, you're not under the care of the system. You're not being provided for. They don't have any community around them. They don't have anybody to lean into. And the aspects in which we lead them in is so detrimental to their health. And then we wonder why we have a homeless problem, because half of those people have gone through the care system and we are just leaving them out there with no reasons and no resources or anything to survive. So what do we expect them to not go into those spaces? Because then it becomes, which I'm very familiar with, is that it becomes a survival of the fittest mechanism, where it's like, okay, well, if I don't have money and I don't have any resources coming in, of course I'm going to go steal, or I'm going to go sell drugs to bring in money, or I'm going to, you know, go into sexual trafficking or anything like that, or, you know, sell my body for money or whatever. It becomes an aspect of the vital resources at the core of things, of having a roof over your head, having a bed to sleep in, and having a warm meal to eat in it to eat at night. I mean, those are some things we take advantage of and we, you know, don't really even think about on a daily basis. So some of the things I'm involved in is providing community, providing skill sets, programs, building skill sets for some of these kids, helping them to know that they have resources when they are going to age out, because it becomes really a timeline for them. It's like almost like, you know, they're checking off the boxes on the calendar, like, okay, I know this day I'm going to age out. So now it becomes a countdown for them, and nobody likes to, like, they know when their time is coming up, and that only adds more anxiety and adds more stress to the whole situation. So we need to do a better job of providing resources, providing community, and knowing that they have people on their side that care, because they don't have family, you know, and they don't know what that word family is, you know. And the Christian community is, they have a heart for it and they really want to do something. But I feel like a lot, not only that aspect, but overall is we're not activating. I'm not pulling the trigger on the things that we know, you know. We're kind of taking the easy way out and doing things like having camps and, you know, having an event and whatever. That's great for social aspects, but after that event, they go back to the same reality in which they came from. So the reality aspect is where we need to change it.
Wow. So this is a very naive, dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So why wouldn't their foster parents still be in their life? I know, because they're not getting money, but, like, really, they just kind of like see ya. Is that usually what happens?
Well, I mean, it's not an aspect that they're not in their lives, but you also have to understand too, is that there is an unsurmountable amount of foster kids coming into the system and housing is very limited. So of course, if you have a new kid and a new family coming in, they are pretty much taking a priority over the kid that has been there for a sustained amount of time. And they kind of know what's happening with them. So it's kind of like, all right, neither one is more important at all. I mean, these are children's lives we're playing with. It's really a tough situation where it's like the foster care system is a business just like any other business. And the aspects, if we resolve a lot of these aspects, a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money. You know, unfortunately, that's how it is. You have social worker aspects, you have all these nonprofit companies and organizations which are pulling in funds and grants and everything else. So it's a business. It's a business, you know, and the kids are the products, and it's terrible. So, you know, my aspect is, if you start tackling some of and start really approaching and impacting some of the kids that are aging out and providing for them, and knowing that they're going to grow into successful people and successful community aspects, they come back to that system and want to rewash and help the next generation come up. So it becomes a, you know, kind of a trickle down effect of things. But the foster parents, there's a lot of them that are in it for, there's a lot that are in it for business, you know, and they get paid for each kid for housing these kids too. You know, that was a big, you know, when not as of late, but years and years ago, that was a very big problem within the foster care system where people were taking in kids because it was a paycheck. And there was a whole movie done on it as well, about the whole aspect of there was an organization that was pretty much every time a social worker would place a kid, they would get paid. So they didn't care where they placed them. Yeah, they would get paid. The social worker would get paid, and the parents and the housing would get paid as well. So they didn't care where they placed them. And a lot of these kids were getting replaced into abusive homes, into sexually abusive homes. And it was just ridiculous how many times these kids were bouncing around from home to home to home. So it's still a very big problem, and not a lot of solutions. There are some companies that are trying to make some movement, but you need more people and more first person experiences in order to really move that needle. And like, you know, people like myself that have been through the care system that understand it, you know, there's a lot of people that are outside trying to be like, trying to give their voice and trying to give information from secondhand.
Yeah, that's so true. I find that with any kind of like trauma or any issue in life, it's like even to the point of like just like one-on-one situations, you know, when you've gone through something really, really hard and then someone's really trying to comfort you or love on you, but they've never been through that, it's like it's just really sometimes painful. Oh my gosh, that is so funny. So, you know, on this podcast, we do not like perform. So if the phone rings and Lindsay just kind of shut it off, just continue on. Sorry, everyone. But I, you know, I feel like I understand what you're saying. Like it needs to be someone that has experienced it because you guys really know, like you've experienced, you know, the internal things that were going on, which in my mind is a lot of not, I'm not even going to say foster care because I don't have experience there, but you know, a lot of times in my life on the outside, everyone thought my life was really great. Like no one would have thought there were any problems. On the inside is what caused me to, you know, just struggle a ton, but no one knew that that was going on. So unless someone has gone through like you, like foster care, they don't understand the internal part of it. They might understand the external part of it, but they don't understand the internal trauma that is to not have a family or to feel that rejection from the original family, even though it wasn't really rejection, but it was probably just brokenness or whatnot. But like that rejection or that abandonment that then gets inside your soul and just causes problems. You know, it just causes problems that you can't overcome things as easy as people that had supportive family, you know, so it just, to me, it makes a lot of sense what you're saying, you know, even from the work I do. And it just makes a lot of sense from what you're saying. So it's like so amazing. And to have, this might be slightly naive, so forgive me, but like, I could just imagine like when someone went through the things I went through and then I see them like doing something amazing, I'm like, oh, it just encourages me like, well, if that person did it, maybe I could do it, you know? And I feel like you would be that for kids that have gone through, experienced the foster care system. It's like, if he, you know what I mean? If he could live his dream or, you know, be a professional athlete, which is probably a dream of a lot of kids, I'm sure. And he went through this, maybe I could, you know, I just see that could be such an encouragement for them. So I just love that, like, God has given you this platform, you know, of being an athlete, a professional athlete. And then at the same time, you have this story that could really inspire kids. So that's just like really powerful. I just love it. I just love when God does that, you know, that's part of the redemption, I feel, and the restoration is like, he wants to, you know, take our stories, whatever they were, and restore them in such a way that it just helps so many people in the process. So that's so cool. Yeah. So are you, and I don't know, you can tell me, no, Lindsay, we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
But like, do you have an organization, or is there something you're specifically doing or you're wanting to do around this?
Yeah. So one of my personal organization where we've built out several different skill set programs and things for other organizations, which we've approached it by our organization it's called Fostering Success. And it's more of an aspect of being able to allocate and also to provide insight for specific organizations that we partner with, to give them a kind of a niche in which they can focus on to really make some movement and put their organization as an authority in one space, instead of trying to kind of do the whole umbrella of things. But really what I'm passionate about is, one is building alliances in several different sectors to really make an impact of the whole system. And that's going to take some time. And that also is not only, you know, organizations within the foster care system, but organizations within the Christian space, you know, the tech space, you know, some other spaces, and gathering this nucleus of an alliance that is kind of like this really powerful aspect. So if, you know, analogy wise, if you take like our T cells in our bodies are like kind of like our fighters, right? And like, you know, if a disease comes into your body, or a virus comes into your body, your T cell will go and it'll attack it and break it down, replicate it, so it cannot come back and cause more harm or mutate or anything. It's pretty much your warriors in your body. So if you gather up all these people and you gather up all these alliances, and then you plant them within the system, and they go after each problem in subsequent, you know, whether it be pre-intervention, whether it be during foster care, whether it be social worker aspects, or whether it be the aspects of aging out youth. One by one, you're constantly shifting and reforming and reshaping what the overall foster care system looks like, what it does, how it acts, how it produces. So you're trying to shift it and shape it from the inside out, instead of trying to attack all these things from one space at a time. So I like to kind of think of it as like we're the authorities on the aspects, and we're trying to implement and reprogram some of the things that are going on out there in organizations and nonprofits, and what they say they do and actually what they do with the money that they get, because there's a lot of misuse in the money that they get. You know, you have nonprofits that are getting unsurmountable amount of money and doing absolutely nothing, you know, and kind of their CEOs and everybody else in the hierarchy of it are going on vacations and doing nothing, and throwing a gala dinner once a year, or throwing a toy drive here and there. And that's pretty much their aspect of things. And that does absolutely nothing. So.
That's really true and very powerful. And I love saying it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like, you can just tell how passionate you are about it. And I mean, I don't know a ton about it, so it's a real honor to hear it straight from you. If there are people out there that are listening to this, that are like, this is my thing too, you know, like how could they get in touch with what you're doing, or what, how do you have people contact your organization, get involved at
gosh,
all?
Gosh, follow you. Yeah, there's a website called For Fostering Success. You can get in touch with me and my team directly on my website. I have all my links and everything. You can see everything that I'm doing on my website. It's stevieb.com. And then, you know, I'm talking about a plethora of things, which we should talk and get you on my show as well, because I have my own podcast on CPN Network, which is called What's Your Armor? And it's all about people walking through their valleys and peaks, and what was their process in their valleys, and how did they get out of it, and what, you know, where's their faith walk, where did it start, and you know, all that aspect, and has my full story on there and stuff. So very passionate about the story piece, you know, of, you know, people's stories and understanding that, you know, like you said before, it's kind of like the internal aspect. And that was one of the topics that I speak on, is storytelling. And it's not the story themselves that we relate to, it's the emotional pieces that are attached to those stories, that we are the even and kind of universal language in which we all understand, like abandonment, fear, and loss, and all that stuff. That's the even playing field. And, you know, my story is no more important than anybody else's. I'm just, you know, blessed enough to be able to live the story that God's writing for me. So,
yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. I love process. I'm kind of weird, but like, I love the process for some reason. I don't know why it is, but I just am like, I used to try to like overcome all the things. And then I just realized, like, you know what? God is with me in all of it. And he's so kind and loving. And so I'm just going to let him like take me through the process, you know, and not try to fix myself. I used to fix myself hardcore, you know, like I had struggles with codependency. And so I just will never forget the moment I was in like a recovery meeting and the Lord goes, Lindsay, your struggle with codependency is now turned on yourself. Like you're trying to fix yourself. You used to want to fix other people and now you want to fix yourself. He's like, can you just be loved? It's like, I'm trying. I love that, but it's true. I mean, every single person, no matter, and you know, every single person, no matter if they look like they've got it all together or they look like they don't have it all together. And we both know both sides of that coin, you know, people are hurting on the inside and they sometimes don't even know how to, they don't even know how to connect to it. And you're right. Story is such a powerful way for people to cathartically heal, you know, to like connect to the story and like take the journey with the character. And yeah, I'm such a big fan of that. And I've talked about that on my podcast before, like does God heal through television? Because to be honest with you, right, television is like the biggest story platform there is. And, you know, I've been watching these shows that are just very normal, like The Mentalist or, you know, like NCIS or just like shows that are not at all about the subject that I may be going through, but God will teach me things, you know, as I take the journey with these characters. And he knows my, I call them ouchies just to keep it light, you know, with the wounds, or, you know, people have different words for them, but I just call it ouchies to keep it light because we're children, right? We're children.
Okay. Yeah.
But you know, like, it's like that character, God knows what my ouchies are, you know? So I'll be watching this character and it'll be like healing things inside of me, the story, I can connect to it. And as the character overcomes, you know, the issue, like it kind of helps my heart overcome. So I'm a big fan of story. I think Jesus taught through story, you know, like that was like his main way of teaching is through parables. So I think it's so cool that in the modern day we're still doing it. we're still, you know, helping people through story. So it's so amazing. I'm so honored to get to meet you. I know we met like briefly on a Christian call, but this has been really cool to sit and talk to you and just hear a little bit more of your story. I'm interested in going and listening to your full story on your podcast, because I know it's powerful. And it doesn't surprise me of what you're doing and the platform God's given you, because he loves to take the broken parts of our story and make them beautiful and then help other people with them. So sounds like God to me, Stevie.
it's been a ride for sure. It's definitely been a ride.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this has been so good. I would love to ask you to pray for us. Is that okay? I didn't really prepare you for that, but
yeah, without a doubt, I'd love it.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Yeah, I love it. Dear Lord, thank you for this time, this community. Thank you for this relationship. Thank you for just allowing us to bring forth some value to whoever's listening and whoever needs it in this moment, in this season. And I just ask and I bestow the same word that I'm carrying for this year and the next 3 years as of restoration, that this chapter that you're writing in my life and this chapter that you're writing in whoever's listening at this point is a time for restoration. All the things that were previous, that when they look in the rearview mirror, that they can see you evidently in each and every situation and know that you have been there to provide, to protect, and to keep them moving forward. And that they should be expectant of great things because their greatest days are yet to come. In Jesus' name, I pray.
Amen. Amen. So true. The best days are yet to come. That's a good word. I agree with that. Well, thank you so much again for being on the show, guys. I will definitely link his website and everything he talked about on the show notes. So if this is something that's like pulling at your heartstrings, like, I mean, he sounds like a great guy to jump on board with. So I would suggest doing that. And just thank you again for your time. I know you're a busy guy, 25 hours for 20 seconds. That's kind of insane. of work. I'm like, yeah. Okay. But if I do my 10,000 steps a day, I'm really proud of myself. So I guess we all just, you know, we have to do our best. I was telling
you, you know, we take in our stride.
That's my stride. I was telling him in junior high school, you guys, if my mother's watching this, she will be like, yes, I remember. But I was like really bad at track and field, but I tried the hurdles, you know, and I was like a skinny little like Kermit the Frog girl. And I'm like running and like trying my best, trying to leap over the hurdle. And I crashed on my face. But anyway, God had other things for me. So it's good. We don't all have to be the same thing.
That's it. Yeah. I
know. Oh, well, this has been so fun. So guys, we thank you for watching and listening, and we bless you all, and we'll see you next time.
Well, 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 wasn't that interesting? We can't wait until next week. Don't forget to grab Crushing Your Inner Critic Masterclass at lindseymorgan.co and use the promo code LOVE to get 50% off. This was recorded at New Vine Music in Santa Monica, California. We would like to thank Leonardo Antonori for producing this track. To learn more about them or to license original music for your next project, go to newvinemusic.com.